Good evening, everybody. Parashat Pinchas. Okay, very interesting parasha. Like all the parashot, Pinchas. And of course, we cannot go into Parashat Pinchas without talking about Pinchas himself, though there are a lot of other issues in the parasha. But if we take all those issues, the Rav Levinsohn says it's really Moshe Rabbeinu doing everything before he goes to make sure that when he goes, Am Yisrael is going to be okay and everything is going to go smoothly on. So we're talking in our parasha about Pinchas, and we're talking about counting the people, and talking about getting Eretz Yisrael, and we're talking about if there are only daughters and there are no sons, what happens with the land. And we're talking about the Chagim, we're talking about the Korban HaTamid, and we're talking about the next leader, Yehoshua Binun. So there are a lot of things that when we connect them together, we really see that it's really Moshe Rabbeinu organizing things before he goes. So Pinchas. Pinchas is the main, that's the name of the parasha. We have to understand who is Pinchas. So the first thing with Pinchas is if we look at how it's written in the Torah, the Yud. By the way, Pinchas, if you write, you take word and you write Pinchas in Hebrew, if you write it with the Yud, it makes you a red mark underneath because it's, you should write Pinchas without the Yud. But the thing is that that's what you're talking about. So not only it's with the Yud, when you look at the Torah, you will see that the Yud is very small. You see Pinchas and the Yud, like,
Yud
so small that you have...
Yud is always small.
Yud is always small. A Yid is always small. But in a minute you see that there is no small Yid. All the Yids are great and big. The problem is they think themselves that they are small, or other people think they are small. And that's one of the big lessons of our parsha. Because Pinchas, till now, we don't know who he is. We never met him. We never heard about him. Suddenly this guy, and you have to, if you imagine to yourself what's happening, like something is happening, and everybody's standing there. And it's Moshe Rabbeinu, it's Aaron, it's all the great people of the nation are standing there, doing nothing. Action. And suddenly this guy comes from the public, from the audience, from the congregation, from I don't know where, and does this unbelievable thing. First of all, how dare he? And really, the Gemara says that we're talking about him. Hey, look at this guy. His great-grandfather is an idol worshipper. And he goes and kills a head of a tribe in Eretz, in Am Yisrael. And really, what's going on here? And what's the lesson for us? Because you have to understand, when we talk about Pinchas, we are not allowed to do what he did. Why? He's getting this covenant of peace, which is also very puzzling, because
you killed
somebody, and you know you want to give him a reward. Okay, give him a reward, but giving a covenant of peace, what is the connection between peace and killing somebody? That's an action that makes war, not peace. So there are a lot of puzzling things here, and the thing is that in order to achieve peace. And this is why the Torah is mentioning us that Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen. Why do we need to know this? So from one point of view, because they were talking about him, how dare he, which is which his grandfather was an idol worshipper, do what he did. So the Torah,
he's also the grandson of Aaron.
That's what the Torah is telling us. So you know, from one side they're telling us that he is a grandson of Yitro. From the other side is the grandson of Moshe. So what are they really telling us? What is the story behind this?
Wait, he's the grandson of Aharon or Moshe?
His mother. The mother of let's say the wife of Elazar was also a Midianite.
Oh.
So the grandfather was Yitro. So in other words,
the wife's son. Okay.
Yes,
the wife's
Moshe Rabbeinu is also married to a Midianite,
yes.
Also the daughter of Yitro. So it's very interesting to see, but the Torah is telling us not that he is a grandson of Yitro, but he's a grandson of Aaron. Why? To tell us a big lesson. Aaron, we say, what is the thing that when we talk about Aaron, what do we say? Ohev shalom ve'rodef shalom. He loves peace and he chases the peace. And Ohev Shalom, I understand. What is chasing peace? I understand somebody who loves peace. What is chasing peace?
Looking for people who have problems and help, tries to help them.
So
he's going out to, instead of waiting for them to come to him.
Why do we call it chasing peace?
What do you mean chasing? Is it something I said?
Not chosen. Chasing. Ohev shalom verodef shalom. Rodef is when you chase somebody. Normally it will be on something not so nice. If you chase somebody, you want to kill him, you want to do something bad to him. So you wouldn't call somebody who is looking for peace chasing peace. You will say looking for peace. Mm-hmm. It's not the right word to use.
Pursuing.
Yes. So why do we use this word? Because sometimes in order to achieve peace, you need to do war. And that's what Pinchas is telling us. And this is why he's getting the covenant of peace, because the action he did was really for peace. Because there was something terrible happening in Am Yisrael, and there was a plague. People were being killed. And who stopped it? Pinchas, by killing Zimri ben Salu and what's her name? Zimri ben Salu and Kozbi Batsu. But when he killed them, he really stopped the plague. So he brought peace between Am Yisrael and God. So this is why he got the covenant and peace. In other words, peace is not always talking about peace or doing peace. Something to, in order to do peace, you need to go to war. And we know it, unfortunately. Am Yisrael is a nation that talks about peace, wants peace, and we never ever started something. Always people are starting with us. And the funny thing is that we are being called
the bad ones.
We are the aggressors. Why? We are those who are really looking for peace. There is not one country in the world that would allow people going on their border and sitting like this. And a lot of other things. And we all know it. Now, Pinchas is teaching us a big lesson. To tell us, first of all, that not everything that looks like war or murder is really what it is. You have to look exactly what is behind it. But this is only Pinchas can do this, not we. This is why the Torah is mentioning it, the Kodesh Baruch Hu is telling us. וידבר השם למשה לאמור, פנחס בן אלעזר, בן אהרון הכהן, הישיב את חמתי מעל בני ישראל בקנאו, את קינתי, when he made an action of jealousy for me, for my קינתי, my jealousy, בתוכם, inside them, ולא קיליתי את בני ישראל בקינתי. And I didn't finish off with Am Yisrael with my jealousy about what. By the way, the word jealousy, it's a very complicated. Yeah, it's a very
means fanatic.
Yeah, it's very it's a very complicated word, but because normally we'll use it for something bad, and this is why every time when I get to this parsha, I have this problem to understand exactly what is the mean. Why is it the Torah using the word kina, jealousy, when it talks about doing something good? And nevertheless, can kine et kin ati betocham.
There's a word called zealous.
Yeah, zealousness. It's more zealous.
So what is zealous?
What is zealous?
What is zealous? It's the same thing if you think about it.
Not
it's
really.
Somebody who is doing zealous. An extreme action for something he believes.
Yeah, but it can be good or bad.
Right,
but
it can be good or bad, yes?
Well, zealous usually has a...
What? Is it good or bad?
Being negative. There is
as well.
So that's what I'm saying. So you can look at it...
It's like fanaticism almost.
Exactly. It's the same shoresh. Also in English.
Mm-hmm.
When you say zealous or you say jealous, what is it? It's the same
it's
word.
It's a different letter.
But it's the same word. In Hebrew also, kina. How? In Hebrew it's even worse. How... You say kanai. What is kanai?
Kanai is a fanatic.
Or mekane be somebody. Kanai. He's
well,
a kanai.
But usually when you're jealous, you're...
So, is it connected or not? That's exactly the point.
Yeah.
Is jealousy connected with jealous? Is it connected or not? It is.
What?
But here,
can I? When you talk about can I in the matter of I am jealous about what is God, or talking about?
But here it's talking about God, and God doesn't have. You can't say God is jealous. Say zealous.
So what's going on here? So we have to understand what's going on here.
They're not the same words, jealous and zealous.
No.
Yeah, but in Hebrew, you see, we're talking about the Torah. The Torah is written in Hebrew. And in Hebrew, definitely, it's exactly the same word.
I meant to ask you.
There is not even a letter that is changed. How can you explain this? El nekamot Hashem, el nekamot Ophia. How can you explain this? What is el nekamot? God is...
jealous.
No, revenge. This is revenge. This is even worse. We are being told not to revenge. And Kladat El Nekamot Hashem, El Nekamot. What's going on? So, how? And by the way, it's very interesting. When we look at the explanation of Rashi, he says, Kinet Kinati Nakam Et Nikmati.
Wow. Kinet Kinati Nakam Et Nikmati.
So, Kinet Kinati, the jealousy is really revenge. So now we're even in a worse problem. What's going on here? So, it's very interesting. Rashar Hirsch, and maybe we'll talk about it on Sunday or Tuesday, whatever it is. He's got this beautiful expression of Sefer Tehillim, and when he says, it gets to this, El Nekamot Hashem, El Nekamot Ophia, he says, what is this jealousy we're talking about? What is the revenge we're talking about? He says, if you...
Who says it's Rashi or Rashi?
Rashi, the Reb Shimshon Raphael Hirsch. If you causing something to... How can you explain it? If you doing something wrong and you're really disturbing or taking off or making it something that is not allowed or is allowed, you make the opposite. In other words, you make a wrong action. You make an action that makes something happen which is not good. Now, revenge will be to do the opposite. To revenge the action is to, how do we say in Hebrew, lachzir atara liyoshna, to complete the missing thing. In other words, you took something, I'm taking it from you. That is revenge. Or you damaged something and I fix it. In other words, in the meaning of the meaning of what did you say? Not jealousy? The other one?
Zealous?
No.
Vengeance.
Vengeance. The meaning is putting back the thing in the right position or completing what is missing. In other words...
reversing the situation?
Yes. Bringing it back to what it was. This is a very interesting explanation, but when we take this explanation and connect it to what we say... we start to understand what's the meaning of the positive jealousy. Positive jealousy is if somebody, for example, in our way, to understand it in a very simple way. We have jealous husband and we have jealous wife. What does it mean? If you see somebody talks with your husband, or you see somebody talk with your wife or with your friend, there are people that are very jealous. Why did you talk with this guy? What did he say? What did you have between
you?
How
did you know?
And we all know jealous husbands and jealous wife, and sometimes it gets to levels which are really
dangerous.
So in other words, when I love somebody, when somebody wants to take it from me, or let's take another step, when somebody wants to hurt somebody that I love. Now, jealous, I'm jealous for him. This is kano et kinati. There was an action made here that affected God. Affected God. You cannot affect God, but the meaning is affected the honor of God. Let's put it this way. In our eyes. Because what Zimri ben Salu did was very wrong. And what Pinchas did, he put the situation, fixed it.
Straight.
He made things straight again. This is the meaning the positive meaning of jealousy and revenge. The positive meaning. In other words, it's not revenge how we think it is, but his revenge is, what is revenge? Somebody did something wrong to me, so I do it.
Or he did the same.
Maybe the same action.
Yes. Or if I want to do it in the right thing, somebody did something bad, so I want to pay off. Or let's put it on the situation. I want to take the situation back to what it was, to fix it. Which is, it's very interesting, because it's much easier to explain it in Hebrew, because the words go together and you understand it more. But now we realize that when we talk about jealousy, or jealous, or what you, how do you call
jealous.
It? Zealous, or
jealous.
Or revenge, we understand that everything, even the worst thing, can be positive. In other words, it depends what you do with it. And the example is here. We have Pinchas, and we have Zimri ben Salu. What tribe is Zimri ben Salu?
Yeah.
Shimon. The tribe of Shimon.
No, tribe.
What tribe is Pinchas? Levi. Does it remind you something?
Shimon and Levi.
Shimon and Levi. They are always together. And they get also the same blessing. That doesn't look exactly like a blessing. When Yaakov is saying, I'm going to spread you all over Israel.
Shimon also?
Both of them. Shimon and Levi Achim. So in other words, we have here two brothers that have the same qualities, or let's say, I don't know if you call it qualities, or the same problems, or the same...
defects.
See, that's exactly the point. You cannot say defects, but it's, they have the same nature.
Way of thinking.
The same nature. They have the same nature. They are very, like, they take things... Yes, they have the same nature, which makes them, like, be very extreme in actions. Mm. So, to be extreme in action...
One in the wrong way and one
exactly.
in the right.
You can take it to the right way, and you can take it the wrong way. That's why Yaakov Avinu is saying, I'm going to spread them. The Rav Nefesal says it's like a salad. You take a salad, you take salt. Now, if you pull the salt in one side, can you eat it? It's too salty. But when you spread the salt all over the salad, it makes the salad much tastier. So that's the same thing with the tribe of Shimon and Levi. Yaakov Avinu says, you have a problem. You are very zealous. You are very extreme. You don't think so much and you go into action. We need it. But we need it in a small portion. Not too much.
Also at the right time.
At the right time and the right place. And what is the right place? You be teachers. You be rabbis. You will explain to people what is to worship God. You give them this, excitement and energy, how to worship God. But you cannot have it too much, because people cannot take it too much. It's like you put all the salt in one place. The problem is that even if you spread them, you still can do the good with it and the bad. So the Torah is putting us in front of the picture. You see? Those two figures have the same attitude. One is using it to worship God and the highest level. He is really risking his life. He's not risking life, he's really suicide. Because Pinchas goes into the tribe of Shimon to kill the head of the tribe. What do you think? Can he survive this?
No.
Definitely not. They're going to kill him. He's got all those miracles that the Gemara brings. The miracles happened to him because it was really a suicide mission. In other words, he's not doing it for himself. And that's exactly the point. When you do things for yourself, this is not the action for God. This is action for yourself, and it is not only negative, it's forbidden, and this is the wrong thing to do. Pinchas is doing it only from one reason. He loves God, and he cannot stand somebody that does something to affect God in a wrong way. So he is standing up. We don't know who he is. Suddenly this guy that we don't even know him is doing this action while everybody is standing up, because he cannot see his God being affected by this action. And he doesn't care if he's going to be killed. And he does it in front of everybody. That's what the Or HaChaim HaKadosh says. In other words, if you have the ability to do something for God with no interest for yourself, no benefit, no nothing, and do it at all cost, then maybe you can do what Pinchas is doing. But because nobody is like this, it says, Alacha ve'en morim kach. You don't teach this Alacha. So what do we learn from Pinchas? We learn that even if you think you cannot do something, you have power inside you. That's the small yud. The small yud is showing a small Yehudi, a small Jew, yud, Yehudi, a small yud. People think, who am I to do something about what's happening? Look, everybody's doing nothing. So maybe I also sit and do nothing. Who am I? The Torah is telling us, you be like Pinchas. Yes.
Sorry. This boy Eleazar.
Yes. Pinchas.
He was not like Pinchas in some way.
Who?
This Eleazar, this soldier in Hebron.
Yes.
Oh. Azariah.
What did I say 2 minutes ago?
You don't teach, I know. Okay, I don't say that.
And I say it again.
But
you're talking about the example you're giving is not the right example.
I was thinking.
Because you're talking here about a terrorist.
Not God.
And there is no doubt about it that terrorists should be killed. I'm not going to go into the issue because really we don't really know what happened there. We don't know what's going on exactly. I haven't been there. But if you're asking me if a soldier killed a terrorist, this is the punishment he should get, my opinion is not. Of course, there are ways to do things. I don't know exactly what happened there. Of course, somebody and cold-blooded shoot him in the face, this is not allowed. It doesn't matter who it is.
Yeah, but you don't know.
I don't want to go into it because I don't know exactly what happened. Because you hear so many opinions about what really happened or what didn't happen.
I mean his reaction. I don't speak about all the things.
No, his reaction. No. There is a big difference. Because here you're talking about somebody lying down.
Yeah, who's already...
He's already, let's say... He's not half dead, not dead, wounded, I don't care. And you just go and shoot him. Here you're talking about... No, here you're talking about Pinchas going into the tents of Shevet Shimon while everybody's around him and everybody can kill him in one minute. Going into the tent of the head of the tribe while he's doing the action... Because if he would have come there a minute later, he was not allowed to kill him. You have to understand and realize there's so many things involved. That's why we cannot tell nobody to do this. Because the action Pinchas did with all his greatness, he could have done it only in 1 minute. When they were together, during the action, and only then. Because a minute before or a minute later, he was a murderer. That's what it is. That's the aloha. In other words, this is a situation which is 99.9999 impossible. But the Torah is telling us, because the Torah wants to teach us something. But don't think for a minute that you can do what he did. Because in order to have all those things, it's not logical. It's like, for example, to put a murderer in Am Yisrael to trial and to kill him is also 99% impossible.
Correct.
If you learn the Gemara, you will see. So even the Gemara is asking, well, so what do you do with a murderer going around? But if you need this and this and this and this and this and this, what do you do? What do you do? We have God. There are ways to do things, but not going to lie. But anyway,
the civil law, they're the king. When there was a king, they gave him to the king.
He could declare him Moret b'Malchut, and he could decide that. But that's a different thing. But according to the law of the Torah, the Sanhedrin couldn't kill a guy unless he was standing in all the laws that we are learning. And when you learn the laws, you it's unbelievable. It has to be in the same minute. You have to warn him, and you have to have two witnesses. And you have, even if you see the guy going into a room and killing somebody, you don't know. You didn't see him killing, but you see him with a knife. You go into the room a minute, 2 seconds later, he's standing with a knife with blood, and the guy is dead on earth, there is nobody else there, and there is no possibility that anybody can dead, you still cannot do anything. Why? Because you haven't got two witnesses seeing it.
Wow.
So in other words, you have to understand the Torah, the laws of the Torah are not the laws of the normal society, because we have special laws. But if you think for a minute that they're wrong, you are wrong. Because somebody who believes in God knows that somebody has to get punished. Is he going to get punished? Definitely. If he doesn't deserve the punishment, he's not going to be punished. That's what it is. God is looking after us, and he is controlling everything. So our job is to do and go according to the laws of the Torah. That's, and Pinchas is teaching us that sometimes you stand and there are a lot of situations. It's like you're talking about the tefillah and everything. So some people said, you know, okay, I don't care. Nobody says, all the rabbonim don't say anything. All the congregation don't care about the way the people daven. So I'm also not going to do anything. Is it right or wrong? It's wrong. That's why we have Pinchas. And we have to learn from Pinchas. To do things. Sometimes it hurts. Sometimes you risk yourself. But if nobody is going to do anything, what's going to be? So of course, I'm not telling you tomorrow you go and do whatever it is, but what you have in your power, or if you think you haven't got power, you see, one of the beauty, the Noam Elimelech explains that when they were mocking Pinchas, telling him you are the grandson of an idol worshiper, they were not really mocking him. They were jealous in him. Huh. Why? Because they said, well, look, we were standing, doing nothing, and look at this guy, which his grandfather is an idol worshiper, and he did what we should do. In other words, when he did this action, not only he affected himself and the near environment, he affected all Am Yisrael. What the action he did put things in proportion. People realize we should not stand aside on the side and do nothing.
You also must remember Moshe Rabbeinu was there. And he did nothing.
That's why, that's a big lesson here.
Sure.
That's why what I'm talking, because it's not simple. Because Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron, this and everybody is there. But you see, Moshe Rabbeinu, by the way, couldn't do anything. Why? You know why?
No.
Because he was married to who?
To
a Midianite. So if he would have, let's say, killed, for example, Zimri ben Salu, what would they say? Yes, he killed him because he's married to Uzay, doesn't want him to speak or to do anything. So he's no ger badavar. So it's not, you know, we read it and like a thing, it's very complicated situation. It's not so simple. It's very complicated. And when we want to try and figure out what should we learn from it. So the first lesson, as we said, it's very simple. Sometimes in life you stand in front of a, let's say a situation that you think, who am I to do a certain action or not? So the Torah is telling you, this small yud, you see, it's very hard to see it, but it's there. Look at Pinchas. Nobody knew him before. Suddenly, he does this thing. So also you don't realize the powers you've got. So you shouldn't stand aside. You should try and do whatever you can. And believe me, sometimes you wouldn't even believe what's going to happen afterwards. Why? Because it's not going to help. So you see, Noam Elimelech says not only it helped, it made people realize how wrong they were doing nothing. Because Moshe Rabbeinu says be putting on the side. Aaron, you can also put him on the side because he is also involved in a certain way because he is also connected to the Midianite, but his son is married to one of them, and maybe there is something we'll say. Maybe they want to quite so. You needed somebody.
Yoshua Ben-Nun also.
That in our parasha also the same thing. Moshe Rabbeinu wants the next leader, and he thinks about his sons. And if Moshe Rabbeinu thinks about his sons, they were suitable for the job. But God is telling him, no. You take Yoshua, and who is Yoshua? Who is Yoshua? What is his? What is his job?
Student from Moshe Rabbeinu.
Student. There is a masharet. They say. He's a servant of Moshe. That's what they call you. To teach you a big lesson. It's not where you come from.
It's who who you know.
It's you know, they're telling that this guy came to the rabbi, says, you know, my father is this rabbi, my grandfather is this rabbi, yes. Father is this rabbi. He says, I've got the yichus, unbelievable, says the rabbi. I want to talk with you with numbers. You know, you have a one. When you take the zero and put it on the right side, you have 10. You take another zero, put it on the right side, you have 100. You take another zero, put it on the right side, you have 1,000. And then, but the point is, if you take the zero, even if you have the 1,000, you put the zero on the left side, what have you got?
One.
A zero.
Zero.
No, the zero. You take the zero.
And put it on
you,
the
he is the zero, the guy.
Zero.
No, if you put the zero on the left side.
Of the one.
No,
what
if
it's
a
no, the zero. What happens to the zero?
Oh, the zero becomes nothing.
Zero.
That's what I'm saying. When I put the zero on the right side, it becomes 10.
It becomes
when I put another zero, it's 1,000. But when I put even if you have 1,000,000 and I put the zero on the left side, what have I got? A zero.
So the moral of the story,
it depends where you
stand. On the right side.
Exactly. That's really the moral. You know, we're talking about this, not spirit, about people doing things, you know. And you know, there was this Vadabai. You know what Vadabai is? The committee of the house. And, you know, it's a difficult job. And, you know, you have people that pay, people don't pay, and you want to find the right way. And this guy was really doing everything in his power that everybody would be satisfied. And people complained. One day he was looking at the list, who is paying, who is not paying, and he found out an unbelievable thing. Those who were paying on time never complained. Who were those who always complained?
Oh, the ones who didn't.
The ones who didn't pay on time.
Like in the shul, the ones who don't do anything and the ones who complain.
So, this brings to an interesting thing. You know, there is the 10 first people that come to shul. They are taking the reward for all the people that are going to come later. That's the Gemara I think. They are being blessed. So somebody came and asked a very interesting question. Why do you bless those first ten? What's happening with those who will stay later on? Why don't you bless the 10 that will stay later? Stay in shul? Why? Why not? Is it fair or not? Good you bless question. The one who come first. Why don't you bless the one who go last? You know why? The same people. It's the same people. You will see, look at it. You see, those who come first, they are the ones who go last. And those who come in the middle, they go in the middle. You can look at it all around. It's like I told you a few times again, this the Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein says, you know, in the first temple, they had a miracle. When everybody came to everybody was coming, Aliyah LaRegel, and like it was very crowded. You hardly could stand there. But when it was this big miracle, when they come to the point where there is Korim U'Mishtachavim, where they had to bow to God, and suddenly there was place. And when talking about the Mikdash, to bow to God was on the floor with the hands and everything, like took a lot of space. So the miracle was that when they were standing, was no place. When they had to bow, suddenly was place for everybody to bow. He says, Zilberstein says, I don't understand this miracle. It's not such a great miracle. We have it every day in shul. When you come to Tfilat Amidah, the Omdim Tzfufim, the shul is full. When you come to Alim Shabeach, when you have to bow, the shul is empty, all gone. So every day you have the same miracle happening. And look, believe me, you know, it's not a joke. Unfortunately, it's not a joke. You can look at shul, you see it. You see it. Those who come first, those who stay. Those who come late, they're the first to go. And that's life. But this is exactly the point that we're trying to learn from our parsha. Our parsha is really telling us, it's like the Rebbe Milubavitch, once somebody came who loved, he really loved playing football. So he came to him, I'm writing about it this Shabbos, it's very interesting point. So he came to, but he was very straight. He says, he came to the Rebbe, and says, Rebbe, I have to go to this game. I have to go. I have to see this game. He says, I am a fan of this group, and I have to go. I have to go. I cannot. So the Rebbe says, okay, you know what? No problem. Go. But I want to ask you something and teach you a lesson for life. Why are you just being fan of the group. Why don't you play? He says, in life, don't be an observer. Be a player. And it's an unbelievable thing.
Yes.
And that's what Pinchas is trying to teach us. In life, don't be an observer. Don't look around what's happening. Be a player. Do things. Act. So, with all the things that we talked, and there is a lot to talk about with this episode with Pinchas, the basic thing is we have powers, and sometimes we don't see them because the yud is small, but it's there. And by the way, this yud, this small yud, is really the neshama that we've got. And each one of us got this neshama. We have unbelievable powers. And that's the big lesson from Pinchas. Don't be an observer, don't be a fan. Be a doer, be a player. Play the game, play it right, of course. Go in the right way. Because we see, and by the way, Pinchas and Zimri ben Salo are not the only figures. There are a lot of figures in our parasha that are in two sides. And if we want to go back, we had the same thing with Korach. Korach, and we have the sons of Korach in our parasha. Korach, not Korach, Bilam. Bilam, Korach also with his sons. And Bilam and Moshe. From one side, you had Moshe, and from the other side, Bilam. They got the same potential. And look what Moshe Rabbeinu did with it, and look what Bilam did with it. In other words, each one of us got power. And sometimes, even jealousy and revenge can be translated to the best thing in the world. It's in our power, which we've got, to do the thing in the right way. Go ahead.
Right.